Thanks for supporting Community Powered Radio. I'm Barbara Bernstein. Next week, we'll talk with Rachel Claren, author of The Cost of Free Land. My engineer is Althea Billings. Thanks for stepping in for this week. We'll go out with Fire in the Mountain by the Neville Brothers. Thanks for listening and stay safe.
Boogie Cat. You're listening to KBOO Portland 90.7 FM Community Radio.
KBOO Community Radio holds open meetings concerning the operations and programming of KBOO in accordance with requirements of the Communications Act of 1934 and certification requirements of the Corporation for Public Broadcasting. Information about KBOO Community Radio's open meeting policy is available at our website at kboo.fm. The Development and Events Committee meets on the third Monday of the month at 5:30 p.m. This month's meeting will be held online through a public video conference. A public link and phone number to attend the meeting can be found on our website at kboo.fm. Please visit our website to verify if a meeting is being held.
KBOO Community Radio couldn't do it without you. Support KBOO by becoming a member during our Wake Up the Neighborhood Fall Membership Drive, taking place now through September 21st. Your contribution goes towards grassroots community radio. Donate now by going to kboo.fm/give. Thank you.
Here at KBOO, we honor the indigenous people whose traditional and ancestral homelands we stand on. The Multnomah, Kathlamet, Clackamas, Tomwater, Wetlala Bands of the Chinook, the Tualatin Kalapuya, and many other indigenous tribes and nations of the region of the Willamette River and that great river known as Shwaneku, Wimal, Nishaiwana, and Columbia. Many names for the living water force that has sustained this region for countless generations and provided phenomenal life to our blessed ecosystems. We believe it is important to acknowledge the ancestors of this land and to recognize that we are here because of the sacrifices forced upon them. In remembering these communities, we honor their legacy, their lives, and their descendants with the forming of relationships to each other and the living world.
KBOO.
Makes you such a threat. We choose the right to be who we are. We know the difference between the reality of freedom and the illusion of freedom. There's a way to live with Earth and a way not to live with Earth. We choose the way of Earth. It's about power.
Chasha.
Kia re re arora.
ako ti koyere, ti koyere.
Abete washtelo, chate washte na pechu zapielo, le unki piki he washtelo. Greetings, good day, I welcome you, my relatives, and I shake your hands with a good heart. It's good for all of us to be here. This is First Voices Radio, National, International, and I'm Teo Kusen Ghost Horse, sending you greetings and strength from the east gate of Turtle Island, where the sun and the water meet the earth at once. And we live in the lands of the Munsee-speaking Lenape. The First Voices Radio is an all-Native-hosted, all-Native-produced by Liz Hill, a member of the Red Lake Ojibwe Nation. Our guest today is a frequent visitor, a good friend. Dr. Manuel Rosenthal is a longtime Colombian activist, researcher, and community organizer. Manuel has been involved with grassroots political organizing with youth, indigenous communities, and urban and rural social movements for four decades. He's part of an initiative, Peoples on the Path, or my lack of Spanish, Pueblo en Camino, with a mandate to weave autonomies and resistance between peoples. And well, what I wanted to talk about was 8 years since 2016, when the peace agreement in Colombia and the between the government forces, I think it was the guerrillas, that ended this century, or at least half the century, of conflict. And millions of Colombians were involved, and of course, indigenous peoples, as we described earlier, off record. And now the area seems to be controlled more by militia groups or armed groups or militia mafia or whatnot. That seems to be an ongoing issue. Either it comes to surface, goes underground, but it's always been there. And here in the United States, I could say many Native people know about the ongoing violence we don't talk about, and the ongoing feeling that something's going to happen. And we want to run fight or flight methodology that's given by modern day psychology, but it's also a security situation. And that peace process seems to be at the bottom of the list and the foundation of what we need to talk about, namely the indigenous peoples. And so I would like to know from you, Manuel, your thoughts on how this long-term process, which it has to be, rather than taking the shortcut to peace that seems to be temporary, which is a Western-flavored terminology as compared to one that is a lasting peace.
Firstly, a big hug to you. And it's wonderful to visit again. I had missed you and these conversations, which we share. I always feel we're around the tulpa. The tulpa is the way the Nazas call the fire at home, where you learn the language, where you learn the stories, where your entire culture is transferred and where you belong. So I feel that's where we meet. And that's my greeting from the heart. It's good to see you. You're reading what's in my heart with that question, and has been in our heart for a long time. When the Colombian president Santos, who's a Nobel laureate and became a Nobel laureate, recognized as a result of the peace negotiations and peace agreement, when he began the negotiation, he said something clearly that I think speaks to your question. He said, the model will not be negotiated. The model is the colonial, imperial, racist model that throws the land and people into oblivion. That model is the source of the absence of peace, which is much worse than war. It is this confusion, restlessness, uncertainty, all these, the way we live in dependency, the way we sell ourselves, and we have a price. It's imposed on us. If we don't have a price, we're nobody. We're thrown into oblivion because of this. That model was not to be negotiated yet. When my partner, Vilma Almendra, who's a NASA Misak indigenous person, and I wrote a three-page text during the peace negotiation titled The Peace of the Peoples Without Owners, and it was published, amongst other pieces, in a journal in Uruguay. It was requested by Raul Sivecki, a friend and journalist. We were labeled by right and left as enemies of peace, and my life was threatened then. If I publish that piece today, if I say what that piece says today, I don't need to argue it. The evidence is out there. There was no peace negotiation. There can't be peace negotiation within this mentality and this system. Cannot be, because it is based on a war against Mother Earth and the exploitation of people. If we're not, as peoples, part of Mother Earth, and our effort is not weaving territories and becoming territories, then we're at war. And we'll always be at war, and there'll never be peace. We said that, and we actually said, this is a country of owners without people. And if two armed factions, on behalf of the territory, on behalf of Mother Earth, and on behalf of all peoples, negotiate and agree on how to exploit, extract, and distribute this territory, there is no peace. It's a continuation of the ongoing war that we call colonization. So we warned about this, and we said, we are going to be worse off, because there was one armed insurgency, the largest one, FARC, and the government armed forces. If you sign a peace agreement, and when it fails, with the same mentality that is based on accumulation and control of territories, you will have many diverse and dispersed groups, and you will transform a criminal order that at least has visible heads into a greater criminal order with many heads, and it will begin to recruit the people that have been resisting, because they'll see no other way to survive and make it. That is what we're living through or dying through today. Every territory in this country is being taken over. I'll say it this way: autonomous criminal territories being consolidated under armed factions that are in coordination or inseparable from the old colonial elites and the old colonial mentality. And I don't think that's a problem for Colombia. You started there. I think that's exactly the case in the United States. It's the case in El Salvador. It's the case the world over. I think we're moving into a world of criminals that control the planet with weapons, but also take over the territories of our imaginaries and our hearts. And we accept whoever is stronger wins and has a right to be powerful. But I say this in pain. I don't say it with joy or as an intellectual analyzing from my head. We suffer this. It's painful.
This is the struggle that most people don't want to go through, but they want the cultural part of romanticizing of who we are as indigenous peoples, but the pain is not there. And the pleasure of the privilege of keeping status quo, the standard of living here in the West, in the States, we don't see that it's being taken away from people in the NASA groups with Gauca or on the reservations here. So I want to say it this way too, Manuel, that we talk about the global South a lot, but also that global North happened way before the global South happened. But it was an ongoing indigenous globalness, the deterioration of any land occupation inhabitable that we had. So the global south happened in the global north. It just was covered over by what you described as the model will not be negotiated. So that's what I'm saying also. That extends way back into 1493, as far as I'm concerned, with the 1493 papal bulls. That's the model that was set up here. And that's unspoken. So what I see, the layers of military regimes, the dictatorships that happen throughout anywhere in the world, but especially in South America, I feel often that although it's always been a criminal activity nation everywhere, that through it all, that spirit, not just of native people, indigenous peoples, but of those such as yourself who really see through the criminality and how they keep us from the consciousness of Earth, as you said, the war against Earth. And that's what they don't want other people to become aware of. But through it all, Manuel, the Earth, we will have no choice but to understand that. The Earth is going to come through, say, look, you want to fight? I will. In that sense.
I agree entirely, and we see it. Like people argue, it's utopian in this context. Can't you see with what's going on? The political electoral processes lead nowhere. One has to choose between bad and worse. The structure of the states have failed. Nation states have failed. Everybody knows that, but the reaction is a nostalgia for the nation state, the nostalgia for an ideal nation state where we had the right to consume and the possibility to consume and so on. But as I was listening to you, a couple of things came to me, to my heart, voices. One, the Zapatistas have been writing a lot and publishing a lot. It's amazing. And first and foremost, they're saying what we're talking about. What they've said clearly is the storm, as they call it, is here. The storm is this devastating, horrendous force of the colonial powers, the colonial confusion, and it is going everywhere. And they're saying, we warned you. We invited you to talk about it. We invited you to organize, to face it. It's here now. And people in the States probably don't know this. People in the continent probably don't know this as much. There are hundreds of thousands of Mayan indigenous peoples from southern Mexico and Chiapas fleeing into Guatemala. Guatemala was the country of the worst war and extermination of indigenous peoples. Now it's receiving the people from Chiapas that are forced to flee. So the conditions there are bad, and the difficulties they're facing are horrendous. But here's something that is happening and speaks for itself. In one of the statements, the Zapatista subcommander Moises speaks about, who's Mayan, he speaks about a girl that is going to be seven generations from the girl that died in the arms of subcommander Marcos that the days prior to the uprising in 1994. And that girl is going to be free. And she will be more than free. She will be freedom. And then they begin to imagine that. And they begin to say what they can't even imagine, but will happen. And it will be a girl, a woman. And it will happen. And she's there already. The seed is there, and it will happen. It's an absolutely moving, and it's so strong. So now they say, we're facing the storm. It is destructive. We're not promising we change anything. But yes, that girl will be free, and with her, the spirit of what's coming. Obviously, we are living on the seventh generation since the conquest began in Turtle Island. And what are we seeing? And many don't want to see it, but what are we seeing and hearing? Amazing voices. For example, what you just said was stated by John Trudell clearly during the Dakota Pipeline. He actually said, white people have been facing the colonizer of this power mentality for generations, black people. So he began by acknowledging the fact that this North-South divide is the division of the world that cannot be anymore. And it's not the South in the North, it's us. It's the oblivion, it's Mother Earth. Mother Earth does not recognize North and South. It doesn't accept North and South. It's absurd. It doesn't even accept nature as a concept, because nature would be an externality. And what are we if not that? So yes, I think we're facing that. Now, the challenge, and I wanted to state this, is two images, very quick ones. One is last night, another indigenous guard, Kiwetekna, was murdered in Cauca, near Toribio. Armed people came in a motorcycle, looked for him, and just killed him. It was a statement, we can kill. The same statement of this mentality that up to now. Now you could hear the voice of his partner, another indigenous guard, in pain, but he wasn't calling for fear. He was actually saying, get out. Let's have some dignity. Let's chase after these people. We have to let them know that we won't accept this, that we won't take this, no matter what happens. We can't be observers today. He was saying, he wasn't calling for arms, he wasn't calling for war, he was calling for freedom, for a statement. That's one. Then the other is the peace community of San Jose de Apartado. It's a serrania, it's a mountain chain, a vive, between the Colombian interior and the Caribbean and Pacific coast, just south of what they call Panama. Now, we went there for a visit. We were invited. Finally, we could go there. And we went from their baseline community across the mountain chain to the other side. We went from Holandita to Mulatos. They don't have a highway. They will not accept a highway. You have to walk or go by mule, 8 hours in mud up to here. We walked in. We went with people from Macarena, the Amazon region. Here we went from, there were some Italians, a small group, and we went to a place where in March, a woman of 26 years of age and her nephew of 14 had been murdered brutally, cowardly, by people in the area who want to extract the resources of that region. On our way there, at the edge of the mountain, at the peak of the mountain chain, we could see, looking back, banana plantations for which they had displaced and murdered people in the region. And towards the Urabá Gulf, with the largest harbor being constructed in the entire continent for corporations to suck out resources from there, that land is the land of the paramilitaries and Clan del Golfo, drug dealers with the army, with the Colombian government. And you could see at the edge those two. And you're surrounded by kids, 14, 15, younger, by women, by elders, by young people in the community, all under threat. And they say right there, there's 300 of us. And we are the only thing that blocks them from taking over all this. Here we live the way we want to live, with the land, in peace, no extractivism, and we care for each other collectively. We're doing it 27 years, surrounded by the worst, most criminal armies and killers in the planet, and they're there. And even if nobody knows they're there, they're still there, and they will be there, as they say, until they kill us, because we have life now. And this is happening. So there's a storm. And I wanted to share this because if they're there, they're more and more. 300 facing the largest army in this continent.
That seems to be a long, resilient, resistant story as far as 1492 and onward. We are talking with Manuel Rosenthal, and he is in Colombia at the moment. And we're talking about even the policies of the government that have been before the urgency that we hear on alternative news media. But I wanted to also present you this, to dig deeper, to go viscerally deeper, if I could say that spiritually, is this, Manuel. I heard a Cree elder, I could say it might have been an Ojibwe elder, but he said this, and I presented it at a panel last week. You people, because we're used to that up here as indigenous peoples, you people, he was talking to Canadians and also to Europeans. So he decided, well, they all come from Europe. He said, you people, you came with your religions, many religions, and we listened to you, we heard you. Those are your religions, those are your ways. No one's going to take them from you. No one's going to touch you. Those are yours. He said, you also came with laws. Those are your laws. We listened to you. We heard you. Respect that. And no one's going to touch you. No one's going to take them away from you. Those are yours. Then he paused. And then he said, but the one thing that we didn't see you come with is land. We're wondering how this land became yours. But we know, mm-hmm. because of the imposition of religion and laws, that if Native people understood that even deeper, which I think we do, really, is those laws and those religions don't fit Earth. They don't fit this part of the planet, at least. And they're part of the failure that's going on now, and everybody's experiencing that, even indigenous peoples. But again, I'll give to the story that I was born at a time where very, very young, there were people who were born in the 1800s. And my parents were, their grandparents were born before contact, at least in the central part of Turtle Island, of the Lakota, is that we had not met white people or the American. So that's how close we are to understanding what colonization is. And I think that's still ongoing. So it's the laws that we are working with, experiencing the rage of religions, but the laws that we keep recycling, regurgitating to explain what's going on with you? Why are you doing this to Earth? Because the understanding or the misunderstanding of Earth is not there because of these laws and the religions. Yeah, long question, commentary.
No, it has to remain there because it's a conversation between us, but it's not for us.
That's Dr. Manuel Rosenthal speaking to us from Colombia. We hear the resilience and what they think and how to keep this together as indigenous peoples of Colombia. We'll be right back. This is First Voices Radio. My name is Tio Kasing, Ghost Horse. And before we went to our break, that was Ozo Matley with Who Discovered America, way back in 2004, but yet 1492.
Land, air, and water, it's nature's law. First Voices Radio brings to you the basics of how not to violate the law and presents the voices of people experiencing the consequences of war against Mother Earth. We bring the awareness of a different paradigm to the airwaves as we shed the same old systematic paradigm that is killing Mother Earth. You can hear the perspective of indigenous peoples throughout the world and how they live with the law, land, air, and water. The voices of the original peoples. Our guests are from every continent on Earth, endangered, unheard, and forbidden from being heard on mainstream and the neoliberal left airwaves, whether it is alternative or progressive radio.
Welcome back to First Voices Radio. My name is Teal Kassin, Ghost Horse. We're talking with Dr. Manuel Rosenthal. We're going to finish this conversation, this discussion about how these foreign laws, how these foreign religions came to the West, came to South America, namely the country of Colombia, how it affects the native peoples there, and how long have they been enduring this colonial regime after regime after regime. we begin there and continue with this deeper conversation. Very fascinating. And thank you for joining us again here on First Voices Radio.
No, it has to remain there because it's a conversation between us, but it's not for us. It's in the tulpa, and we're speaking and not trying to solve anything. I remember several things. One is the Kurdish people looked into the Sumerian scripts that are 50,000 years old, 10,000 years old, etc. And what they call the Neolithic Revolution. And in the Neolithic Revolution, they could see, they could demonstrate, it's there, exposed, clearly, that how this transition was made from a women-based society, Mother Earth-based society, into the society of the priests, the hunters, and the rulers, men. And so what they went through is fantastic because it was a process whereby they attempted and achieved dismantling the initial, the ground, the territorial-based societies that were around women, but not with the concept of hierarchical authoritarian power. And religion was essential to these monotheistic religions, or religions that had to destroy the goddesses, because all women are goddesses, not in the religious tradition that we were taught and imposed, but they're goddesses in their own right, because they are closer to Mother Earth and have been given by Mother Earth capacities, abilities, wisdom that males cannot have. We can share some of it. That doesn't mean superiority. It means they are goddesses. In fact, part of being goddesses in that prior to the Neolithic Revolution was exactly establishing the collective, caring. And if there were women that fell in love with power, they were punished by the women's society so that the harmony could be reestablished. So that was one place where there's evidence for this, but it's not the only place. I've been amazed at listening in what they call Canada and the US in Turtle Island, different indigenous radio programs, lectures, writings everywhere. For example, archaeology by indigenous peoples. They study archaeology at universities, but they don't accept that archaeology. I've been brought to tears listening to them, how storytelling becomes the essence of the rediscovery of their own territories and history, and how things that are not understandable in the history books or archaeology textbooks are becoming understandable today through the storytelling. The linear time that confuses us so much, how that timeline disappears in the storytelling and the legends, and because it teaches lessons that are timeless, and how this is everywhere, and it's coming out in its own right. It's absolutely beautiful. It has a tremendous power. That thinking on one side of the other side of the story, to put it here and now, Venezuela. I was so excited with Chavez and the people's uprising in the streets in the 90s when this started. I was there in the streets in Venezuela. I supported Chavismo in spite of many people warning us that this was the same power with a better speech and discourse. And then I saw how it changed. And now I saw the electoral process on the 28th of July. And I see there are the country in the world where there are more Venezuelans, 8 million have left the country. And the country in the world where most have left to is Colombia. And there's discrimination, there's racism, there's everything against them here. Everything. We used to go flee to Venezuela before. All Colombians used to go there, and there was the same against us there. We didn't learn. But the one point I wanted to make was this. There's a wisdom in people that is amazing. The Maduro government and the regime has taken over the left. The left during Chavez, at the beginning of Chavez, wasn't left. You didn't have to read Marx to be part of that. It was more than hope. It was the strength of people liberating themselves. It's possible to live in a different way. And that's what Chavez represented. Now, that has been silenced by a regime that assumes we are the left. Chavez is us. And all the symbols of every struggle in the past, they have taken over. So it is forbidden to be in the left or in opposition to capitalism or in opposition to patriarchy or corporate extractivism, forbidden by the left in power. If you're against that, you're a fascist. So it's a double trap. You can't even fight against the same system that has been taken over by the other. So where's the wisdom of people? Only the right can run elections, and that's a tactic of those in power that call themselves the left. So they are actually promoting the right to defeat the right and to have an argument to repress them. What did people do? Most Venezuelans don't even know the name of the guy that won the election. And if they know the first name, they don't know the last name. Edmundo, who cares? What they went out to tell Maduro and the other ones is, we define what is right or left. And any predator is a predator, not a speaker of an ideology. You do not represent an ideology. They're being repressed. The government is lying. Everybody knows it's a lie, but look at what's happening. Same in Nicaragua. Same in Venezuela. The same in other progressive governments. And then it's exactly Maduro and Milei, the fascists in Argentina, are as close as they can be. And both of them are the same as Trump or Biden or whatever else comes. So I learned this from a Cree elder when I was in northern Saskatchewan in exile. And he told me this, going back in circle to where you started. He told me this. He said, it doesn't matter if they say a truth or a lie. It doesn't matter because the truth is just one component of the big lie they're telling us. So if we understand that, if it's clear that, then we turn around and put our hearts back to Mother Earth and recognize that in a context, we have to achieve cracks in the wall so we can breathe. But we cannot confuse a crack in the wall with freedom. Freedom is beyond the wall. And this is where we are today. So Latin America and the Abya Yala is now in a context where fascists are moving and they are recruiting indigenous peoples. The NASA are killing the NASA here. Most certainly the one who killed the indigenous guard last night was a NASA youth being trapped into that. But at the same time, I think if we face the end of Mother Earth, its injury, its anger, its pain, and we face the taking over of the territory of our hearts and imaginaries, then we know from that disease what we have to overcome. And that's what Thundering Cloud used to tell me in northern Saskatchewan. Every disease is the lesson of what we have to achieve in order to be free. And I think that's what we have to look at now. And it's very difficult because it's going to be very painful. We are being recruited and we're replicating and reproducing the system that kills our only hope for future. I think that's where we are.
So well spoken, so well thought out. It's these words from the future, as you talked about the Zapatistas. The words from the future are going to help us now, not the hope. The words from the future, our ancestors have gone ahead and are giving us suggestions, their appearance, and their words, their thoughts, of course, their spirit. To me, it's the words from the future that they are giving to us to get through this time. It's always been this way, the seven generations ahead, as well as behind. But very, very well thought, good, heartfelt words. The coma that we are in is something to be said, what you describe. Indigenous peoples don't know they're in a colonial coma. So waking up, when is a waking up time? We can't say that. We just know it's inevitable. It's inevitable within all humans who are still human beings. I talk about these romanticized views, but if you see it happen in nature, it also happens to those who are naturally adaptable to nature. And what's going on here, I feel, is that in Colombia, Colombia forgot about the indigenous peoples and the people, but the people did not forget about Colombia and what it's done. So that memory is alive, and that's where the strength is, that we remember and not go back into the coma. It's a great honor to have you here, as always. Any thoughts?
It's my pleasure. It's wonderful to see you, to feel you, to listen to you, to visit. And my only more than hope, my feeling here is I would love to see that our conversation and our exchange is actually our way of listening to what has been said to us by others, by elders, and that we're trying to name it and we're trying to exchange from it, and that we're actually engaging together around the sacred fire that will lead us to freedom. We're not guiding anybody. We're being guided by Mother Earth and those who learned from her. I thank you so much once again for the possibility to see you, to exchange with you, and to be with others around this fire.
Personal question here. Before that type of freedom that we talk about, we know that, but the freedom that they imposed upon us, and before that freedom, we were free. And that's what we talk about, the free without the imposition of freedom. So the underlying intuition is alive and well as we talk about it. Just wanted to add that to you.
That's amazing. You see, she always comes back here, the Ojibwe, the Anishinaabe, Leanne Simpson.
Oh.
She said it around a different topic, but I feel it's the same. She said the frightening power of the colonial invader is that it is resourceful. And so they listen, but they listen in order to steal from you what is more sacred and valuable to your heart. So what the first and foremost that they stole from us, from Mother Earth, from everyone, was freedom. It's on behalf of freedom that they deny it. Yes. But it's clearly freedom that they talk about, and it isn't freedom. Now, how do we overcome that? Sometimes we just say democracy, for example, is impossible. It's a lie that they made. Now, they're forcing us to say freedom, same story. We should forget about that concept because it's taken by them. And I don't think that's the case. I think what's happening is what the NASA people have said here. Words without action are empty. Actions without words are blind. Words and action outside of the spirit of the community and Mother Earth are death. So yes, if we speak freedom, we understand it, we look for it. We don't allow it to be misinterpreted or manipulated. If somebody says, yes, we're all fighting for freedom, we answer, hold it. No. That's the beginning of the story, not the end of it. I think that is key today.
Yes, I look forward to our conversations in the future, brother.
And it's seeing you. I'd like to give you a big hug.
Yes. So we will. It's an honor as usual. And thank you for this medicine.
Thank you. And be well. Walk. Enjoy life.
Brother and sister, water is life. Mani wachoni, water is life. The blood of our mother flows through our veins. We poison her rivers and bring her great pain. I pray that our love will soon be unlocked. Tribes have assembled at Standing Rock. Those who will follow, water is life. Mani wachoni, water is life. The march of the black snake is still in full stride. When will we? Silence of women, the blindness of man. For our dear mother, water is life. Mani wachoni, water is life. The seasons, may we do right, and for our dear mother, sing water is life. Mani wachoni, water is life. Mani wachoni. Water is life. Water is life.
And that is Luca Bloom, Water is Life, 2017, from the Refuge album. And right before that, after the very fascinating Dr. Manuel Rosenthal talking about what's not talked about in the country of Colombia with the indigenous people's involvement with the anti-indigenous government, the beginning of Western imperialism in that country and other affected countries, including this one in the U.S. Yes, we can say they, but when it comes to this country in America, who are they? But what we do to try to escape they and the responsibility for they. Anyway, right before that was right after that fascinating interview with Manuel Rosenthal, Sea Gets Hotter by Duran Jones and the Indications, featuring Aaron Fraser from the album American Love Call, 2019. Well, now we have arrived at a place we could say hasta la vista, doksha ake wachongkelo, or see you later in the circle of life. You've been listening to First Voices Radio with your host, Teoksin Ghost Horse. I hope you enjoyed the show. I want to thank you for the years of your generous ears. And I just received a text from a woman who's been listening to First Voices Radio ever since, although it was called something else then. I'm still the same host. It's enduring. It's been here for a long time. I want to thank you all for... Thank you. Doksha ake wachyanktelo.
You are tuned into KBOO Portland on 90.7 FM and streaming on the web at kboo.fm.
El apoyo y patrocinio de KBOO provienen de la membresía de KBOO y del Grupo Internacional de Viajes. KBOO Radio Comunitaria e Internacional.